Welcome to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Oral History Project, where we record the oral histories of individuals who were involved in important DOC events. I'm DOC Communications Director Susan McNaughton. This oral history focuses on memories from the October 1989 riot at the State Correctional Institution at Camp Hill. Our guest today, September 17th, 2019, is Jack Neihard, who worked for Commonwealth Media Services at the time of the riot. Thanks for joining us, Jack.
Susan, thanks for having me.
Jack, where were you on Wednesday, October 25th, 1989, when you learned about the riot, and what was your involvement?
Well, we were in our office that day, and a member of our staff had a husband who worked over at Camp Hill. And he had called and said, we're not really sure what's going on, but there are some problems. And what they did was they put us on alert in case we were needed for the press conferences and the various other things that CMS did at the time. So being a neighbor, I live close to the prison. We were across the street from the Allen Middle School, which is basically, maybe 2 miles away. Mm-hmm. I immediately called my wife and said, let the neighbor know that they should get the kids in the house, because they were watching our two daughters at the time. There might be a problem over the prison. So about probably an hour later, we got the phone call and basically said, we need you guys over here, let's go. And what I remember most was, first of all, going over the South Bridge over the Susquehanna River, mm-hmm. and seeing the smoke. It was amazing how much smoke there was at the time. We pulled in and immediately began setting up for press conferences. But it was really a surreal situation in that you saw it was utter chaos. There were just people running around, and as the day went on, it got a little bit worse. And then it finally settled down, and I remember going home and watched the news and saw all the coverage. And being so close to the prison, I kind of nodded off on my couch. And my daughter, who was probably 5 or 6 at the time, comes over to me and shakes me and says, Daddy, wake up. And I was kind of nodding off. I said, what's the matter? Says, Daddy, the men at the prison are being bad. I said, no. I mean, that was last night. Everything is fine. They have it straightened out. She says, no, Daddy. Look, and I sat up, and you could see Route 15 from my house. And all we saw were the tops of the state police cruisers, the old bubble lights, flying down the highway. And the phone rang about 10 minutes later and said, okay, time to come back.
Wow. So when you talk about setting up for press conferences, I mean, this isn't in a building. Where was the press conference area?
We were probably 100 yards away from the institution itself, across the street, in a very large field. And as a result, the media came in, and there was room for them to set what they had to do. In hindsight, it might have been a problem allowing them to be so close, because it gave them a lot of access that normally, in a situation like that, you may not want people to have access to a situation that close.
Right.
And I could recall the media doing some rather strange things.
Such as?
I was a member of the media prior to working for the state, and I can recall one of the TV stations had gotten their hands on basically a blueprint of the prison and was broadcasting live where they were forming with the police, and they might do this, and they might do that. And my first reaction was, my God, those people in there are watching the news. What are you guys doing? Somebody could really get hurt. I mean, you're telegraphing what the proposed plan was to retake the institution. Mm. And again, there were a lot of reporters that you could tell the young ones, because they were really hyper and excited. And some of the veterans who were there realized the gravity of the situation and were a little more laid back. Mm-hmm.
I remember hearing stories about reporters actually going right up to the fence line and talking to inmates that weren't involved in the rioting through the fences.
Well, yeah, that's true. I remember that because it was such a bizarre situation. Again, you had people running all over. The thing I remember, the flames were probably the highest I had ever seen in my life. And it was just this mass chaos. And down in the corner of the yard, I think it was the south end, there were a couple of guys playing basketball. And it just looked so strange. And one of the reporters apparently went over and said, you know, what are you guys doing? And they said, please, please take our picture because we want them to see that we had nothing to do with this.
Oh, wow. So talk to me about some of the briefings that you helped. So what did you do? You set up the podium, you set up sound?
Yeah, we basically had the podium set up, something called a mult box, which is where all the media would plug into the microphones. The advantage being, I had the switch of when the microphone was on or off.
Oh.
Because a lot of times in that situation, if you're standing near a podium and the microphone is on, some people may say stuff that you don't necessarily want others to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a signal with with Ken Robinson at the time, and he would look over, and I would nod, and then I would turn the mics on, and they would begin the briefings. Ken was, I got to tell you, a real friend, but a true professional. There we are, you know, 100 yards away from mayhem, and there's Ken controlling this press conference, giving out the information he could, and in the whole time, remaining calm, collect, unlike, you know, some other people who were, again, they were amped up and running around, and it's like, okay, we have this situation, let's do what we have to do.
Wow. And then John Polakovich was the spokesperson for the prison, and he actually was doing the initial briefings, but there reached a point where he was so exhausted, and he responded to a reporter's question in a way that the press secretary, Ken Robinson, said, yeah, we need to give him a break. Do you recall that at all?
No, not at all. At some point, there was an individual who was a member of the participants of the press conference, and in between briefings, he was walking around talking to the reporters saying, you have to ask about the dead bodies. There's 5 dead bodies in there. And in fact, he had asked me twice, and again, being a former reporter, I looked at him and I said, I'm not a reporter. You know, go somewhere else. And again, he tried to get some of the veteran guys who asked the question, and they didn't bite. And finally, they had a young individual who, you know, in the middle of the briefing says, I have a question, what about the dead bodies? And I can recall Ken Robinson giving this look, like looking around at everybody. And this individual steps in front of Kenny and says, to the effect, that's a rumor, it can't be substantiated.
So the same guy that was going around asking people to ask that question, then jumped in front of Ken, between Ken and the camera, and then said that was a rumor, not true.
Yeah, basically, because I think he wanted to get on television, because of course everybody was running live feeds at the time.
Ugh.
He wasn't getting questions, so he basically planted a question, knowing of course that it had no basis of fact.
Wow. I do remember after that, Ken had called this individual up to his office and pretty much told him how it was going to work from that point on. And I don't think we saw that person anywhere near Ken or any of the prison spokespeople after that. So, interesting factoid there. Wow.
Oh, and again, I mean, in Ken's case, he was a true professional. You know, working at corrections, you rarely have good news at any time coming from that department. And from what I could remember, he was delivering the message he was given, but he did it in such a calm way that he more or less helped the situation by saying, look, it's bad, we're doing what we have to do, and we'll get it straightened out.
Right. Let's talk about technology for a minute here. How did the reporters report their stories back to and or communicate back to their news outlets? Did we have cell phones then?
No, I don't believe so. I think I remember some telephones being brought in for that reason, because back then, you know, the internet was pretty new. You didn't have the live feed that you have today and that kind of stuff. A lot of the local stations had microwave transmitters that they could send the video back. Mm-hmm. And well, as far as the phones, yeah, it wasn't like it is today. I mean, today is so instant that you're on in a second. Back then, it took a while. And I can recall, you know, people even scrambling, saying, can I use a phone? Can I use a phone? Because that was the only way to do it.
Wow. And of course, if I recall correctly, during the riot, especially the second night, the like you said, the local TV stations, news stations, they actually preempted the network, you know, nightly broadcasts to cover the riot. And they were live. Like, I think that was our first real experience with live 24/7 coverage of an incident like that.
You might be right. I mean, I still have a tape of NBC News with Tom Brokaw.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lead story that night of, you know, prison burns in Pennsylvania.
I remember when he called, actually, or I don't know if it was him, but it was somebody, his producer. And I think Ken was down in another office, and I had to put that person on hold and went running. Tom Brokaw's calling on the phone. So, yeah, it was amazing. Amazing coverage. So talk to me about, so the first night, the first day it started around 3 p.m., and then it was pretty much kind of over around 11:30, but I think they had a briefing into early morning hours. So when did you go home then for that, after that first night?
Well, the nice thing was I lived 5 minutes away.
Right.
I was home, and like I said, I slept. We went up the next morning, and then the, you know, the briefings continued throughout the time we were there.
Okay, and then when you went back, and so now we're talking Thursday night into Friday, like, were you there for like 24 hours straight, or how did that work for you?
Primarily after the last briefing, we were sent home, but I remember taking all my gear home with me because I showed up in my own vehicle.
Okay.
I had all the equipment with me.
Wow. Amazing looking back at it, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's 30 years, and it seems like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I would add is the second day, and if there was a humorous spot to this whole situation, I can recall this mountain of a man, state trooper, walking up to me at the briefing site, and he had a shotgun, you know, it looked like a howitzer. And I looked up at this guy, and he goes, "Sir, I've been assigned to this area. Where do you need me?" And I pointed the ground right next to me and said, "Right there would be fine." But I took a look at the reporters going, "You know, what is this?" It's like, "Hey, if this equipment goes down, you know, we can't have any briefing, so I need this nice gentleman standing next to me." But it's just amazing. It seems like yesterday.
Right. Amazing. Well, Jack, I think that's it. Did you have anything else that you recall that you wanted to share?
I don't think so.